Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
Oh, I got the feeling it's going to be a good show today. And it's because of the Thanksgiving vibes. It's because of the, I don't know, just great atmosphere that both you, along with Lorenzo Neal and Jake Hutchinson, Spadoni Lubman yesterday, created Devone. But it's like we're just keeping the good times rolling here. We're on Warriors this week now from 9 to noon on 95.7 The Game. What's up, my man?
How are you? How are you? It's been a picturesque, absolutely could not ask for a better in terms of weather, ideal sort of holiday break, starting with Thanksgiving and then carrying over to Friday and then right into today, all of which, you know, that I've worked, and I've worked hard, and I've been here basically 24/7.
Well, you're going to be working harder tonight. Yeah. You're on Warriors pre and post.
This is where I live, man.
Dude, you're double dutying.
That's right. It's like a fire station. I got a little bunk bed upstairs, eat my meals here. We're all good.
We just need a pole. That's the only thing we're missing.
Slide down right into my seat, find the right microphone, which my headsets for some reason are, I got to get, you know what, since I'm turning into quote unquote a professional in this industry, I got to get customized headsets, I think.
What's up, Cam?
Camera.
Oh, camera.
Well, see, I asked you prior that, like, I don't think clicking that thing off is a good idea.
Well, no. See, I asked you to just simply change browsers, not click entirely out of the Zoom.
No, I just clicked on the messages.
He's fine. All right. First of all, this is Warriors This Week. Evan Kinnings, Dan Devone. You just turned him off again. Thank you, Ken. The thing we're trying to sort through here, by the way, I do feel like it was a nice break. The Warriors played Wednesday. They lost to OKC. They haven't had a game the last two nights. I feel like I've been accustomed to the Warriors playing every single Friday night, so I got to lock in. It was honestly nice last night. Got to sit down. We did more of a true Thanksgiving with the family. Had some friends over. Family's house sitting
Wait,
in Pacific
last night
Heights.
You did?
Yeah, last night. Actually had the turkey, the Brussels sprouts, the pies.
So not on Thursday, on Friday?
No, on Thursday we did some steaks and just huddled around my brother's fire.
Okay.
Which we learned we actually had one. Didn't know there was a fireplace.
All right.
But the Warriors were also able to, you know, I think have an actual holiday. Like, remember last year when Draymond Green was complaining that they always play on Christmas, that they never get a chance to, you know, spend Christmas with their families and...
Watch what you ask for.
What?
Well, I'm just saying. You know how many teams would give a body part to play on Christmas Day?
Well, it also means that you're one of the marquee teams if you're playing on Christmas. Also, I want to say the last six Christmases, it is because the Warriors have either, well, at least prior to a couple of years ago, they're either coming off championships or deep postseason runs. You know, Thanksgiving isn't an NBA day, it's an NFL day. But I always feel like around this time it's about maybe when people start to kind of get the NBA back in their sights. You know, for a lot of people it's after football's over. But here in the Bay Area, let's be honest, football's kind of coming to a close.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think I may have just screwed up YouTube again. But I think that the Warriors I was trying to access the computer. Sorry, Ken, you can stay wherever you are. The Warriors, as we have talked about, usually you want to get to that 20-game threshold before we know where it is that you're at as a team. And so while we're just sort of getting our feet wet into the season and beginning to sort of understand the personality and just exactly what it is that we're dealing with, how much of this is just sort of a hot start to a season, and how much of this is sort of legitimate, sustainable is a word that we've kicked around. And now we're beginning to see a little cracks in the foundation here. And whether it's just temporary, Time will tell, but for the first, and this is why you have to wait, I think, a little bit, right? This is why you have to wait until you get to that 20-25 game mark before you really make any sort of real, quote-unquote, real assessments on this basketball team.
Well, I mean, the Warriors. Sorry, the Warriors are still, you know, in third place in the West, 12-6, but you're right. They've been dealt their first blow of the year. They've had their first three-game losing streak, and a couple of them to, you know, perhaps not-so-great teams. Although Brooklyn, for whatever reason, is a team that has been...
caught fire.
Yeah, they won 4 of 5 after they went on to beat the Warriors. They beat Phoenix on the road, too, where the Warriors are playing tonight. That'll be at 6 o'clock. Dan Devone will have Warriors Live.
Who?
And wrap up at 5 o'clock.
What?
Yeah, it's going to be you, the great Tim Roy, running a two-man weave for about 4 hours.
Yeah,
I can't wait to listen.
I may hand that thing off to Roy when I'm good damn ready to give it to him, which might be at about 5:55. So tell him to stand by.
Now there's something called a network pregame. So we got to get it to the big boys. Although, I think a lot of it's pre-recorded, to be honest.
But to your point, Brooklyn beat Phoenix. I want to say that was like only the second time this year that the Suns lost with their big three were actually in the lineup with Beal, Booker, and Durant.
And they all played well. Durant and Booker both had 30 in that game. Dennis Schroeder is apparently looking like the next coming of, well, I don't know, the great next scorer.
What do you think about purchasing that guy at the deadline?
Schroeder?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I wasn't sure when we were going to do this, but that kind of player is the one that the Warriors are missing. Like, I think the biggest difference between this team and the championship team 2 years ago that everyone seems to be comparing it to is the absence of Jordan Poole, or the absence of that kind of player. A guy who can go get you a bucket, who can beat his man off the dribble, and who can help provide you consistent offense against good defenses or bad defenses every single night, because he played every single game. Whether Curry was in, whether Curry was out, Jordan Poole was a bucket. And the Warriors don't have, outside of Curry, who, by the way, is only averaging 23 points per game, they don't have a second guy that can just go get you a bucket. Andrew Wiggins is a solid scorer. Kuminga profiles to be a good scorer. But they don't have that guy. They just don't.
That's the issue. And it's what we've talked about all along. And this goes back to, I mean, we could re-rack a show from 2 years ago. And it was the exact same theme, is who's the number two to Steph Curry. It's not so much of who's the number two as far as scoring, because you can look at a box and say, oh, wow, you got 25 tonight from Jonathan Kuminga. You got a big 30 spot from Andrew Wiggins. That happens from time to time. There's guys that can fill it up. But specifically, who gives you buckets late in games in a close contest, right? In one of those games where things are hanging in the balance. And they either blitz Steph or just take Steph out of the equation and do the, you know, let's, someone else in the Warriors are going to beat us and it's not Steph Curry. And who's that guy? Not necessarily from the first quarter to the third quarter, but when you get late into games and the majority of NBA games are tightly contested, who's the other go-to? Who's another guy you can go pick and roll with? Who's another guy who can just simply take you off the bounce? And that question still remains unanswered.
Yeah, it does, and I think it was on full display on Wednesday against Oklahoma City. Like, they had 9 straight empty possessions, and Curry didn't play in that game, but Chet Holmgren didn't play for OKC. Jalen Williams was knocked out basically for the second half for the Thunder, who's one of their best players. I thought that's when the game flipped. The Warriors
wasn't available.
Caruso wasn't in. He wasn't in either, and he's a guy who usually closes for them.
I got so many two-way guys.
Yeah, no, OKC is the best team in the West. They are. But even without those three guys for the majority of the game, they're still the number one defense in the NBA. Yeah. And so the Warriors got a little taste of, I think, their own medicine from that standpoint, because they've been putting clamps on people late, and they just could not get a shot off. I think they might have gotten 2 good looks in the last 5 minutes of the game, and one was a Kuminga fadeaway, which he missed. One was a Kuminga driving layup that he missed. And then after that, it took a Hartenstein basically ole to just give Draymond a dunk with 19 seconds left. That was like, they couldn't get anything on that team.
That was everything you needed to know. That was OKC in a snapshot. And it was also sort of everything you needed to know about the Golden State Warriors. That it's a team that without Steph Curry, they have a hard time scoring, especially against somebody like that of OKC. And then that last play of the game, which was just, I mean, because despite everything that you just laid out, you still
had a chance.
Yeah, and perfectly designed play, as they often are, with Steve Kerr, ATO. And sure enough, there it was. Wiggins pops free. And I think Wiggins just rushed it thinking it was a buzzer beater, and he had more time than I think that he realized.
Yeah, there was a couple things there. Well, number one, yeah, he had like 5 seconds left. He went up fast. And then, the game was over anyways. They had no timeouts. Then he didn't foul. Like, SGA got the ball with like 4 seconds left. He went to the free throw line with 1 second left. So they didn't foul. But you didn't have a problem with Kuminga not being in on that last offensive possession? When all you need is two?
No. Because the play design was so perfect. And in that last possession, it popped. It worked. And so it was a matter of, it had nothing to do with Kuminga or anybody else for that matter. It was Draymond Green who drew the double team, who had that perfect sort of lob pass to Wiggins, and Wiggins had a step on his guy. And it was just so tantalizing, right? That ball was just sort of, the pass, first of all, was sort of looped to him, and you're just like, oh, God, get it in his hands and get it up. And then he rushes things in sort of that awkward, with his body motion going in the opposite direction, having to shoot across his body, all of this within 3 feet from the hoop. And I think if he's able to catch, gather, pump fake, either draw a foul or hit the bucket. But Hartenstein was closing, so you never know. But I think the play design was perfect, and I don't think Kuminga really factored into any of that.
Well, we're officially on YouTube, Dan, so you got to say hi to the people. Everyone chiming in, YouTube, Twitch, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. 888-957-9570 is the number. Also the number for the Comcast Business text line. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVoe, Warriors this week from 9 to noon every single Saturday. People are already chiming in, from the 415. How come it seems like Andrew Wiggins is constantly missing little bunnies around the rim? Well, that's something he's done before, but I think that Wiggins has not been nearly an issue this season. The problem is that in those, I guess, tight moments or the down the stretch spots, because you mentioned something about it without Curry. I still think they struggle offensively down the stretch, even with Curry. And we saw that against San Antonio. Now, they were pretty fatigued. They played 3 games in 4 nights. Against Brooklyn, they scored enough. I mean, they had 28 points in the fourth quarter. They just gave up like 40. But even with Curry, they still struggle in the half court down the stretch, because I think teams can just blitz Steph, and there's really nobody else that's going to kill you, at least at this point. If Wiggins, how many players on the Warriors right now can go for 30 points in a game?
Aside from Steph?
Yes.
It's just Wiggins and Kuminga, and that never happens.
And Wiggins has had 2 30-point games in the last 2 seasons now.
Yeah.
So that's...
I don't know that you need 30. I don't know that you need Paul, again...
Well, Dennis Schroeder had 31 on Monday.
I get it, but I'm just saying, I don't know that you need necessarily... I think to your point, not to bring up Paul George or any of the big names, you don't need necessarily someone to give you the 30 points. You just need someone who's going to be a consistent scorer, sort of in a mid-range, or somebody who's going to be able to get his. And it doesn't necessarily have to cross you over and get to the rim, but just somebody who's got some wiggle who can get off a jump shot. And it's not Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield is clearly, he's demonstrated to everybody that he can be a good shooter, obviously, and he's a streaky shooter. He's the pure definition of a shooter. It's like when he's got it, you just feed him, and then you just enjoy the party. But in order for him to get that shot, it's off of pin downs. It's catch and shoot. He's a pure definition of catch and shoot. He's not as effective. If he's got to step back and work you to get in to that jump shot, if he's going to sidestep, that's a low percentage shot for him. Other guys you feel comfortable about doing that, but not Buddy Hield. So I think the player you might be describing is somebody that doesn't necessarily have to be a star, but is somebody that is going to give you some consistent points and do it without not necessarily needing that wide open corner jumper or the gravitational pull, as we always throw around, that Curry provides, but just simply somebody who has a suffocating defender but is able to give you a little wiggle and get that jumper off. You would like to think it's Pajemski, But I don't know what the hell is going on with him. What's his three-point shooting percentage? He's below 20 now. I want to say it's in the teens. I think he's at either 18 or 19% from three, which is absolutely ridiculous. And I don't want to lean on the young guy.
19.7.
And Draymond's right, but that's staggering. And you need him. It's getting to the point where we understand you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. We know how hard you worked in the offseason. Everything Draymond laid out, yeah, I think we're all on board with. But now, as I said, as we get 20 to 25 games into the season, Pajemski scoring and the lack thereof becomes a real sort of problem going forward.
Isn't that the worst shooter on the team?
Oh, no. Is there somebody worse?
There's somebody shooting worse from three-point range than Brandon Pajemski.
What's Kuminga?
It's not Kuminga. Get off Kuminga.
From three?
From three.
Somebody that's playing with...
And it's not a trick question. I wasn't going to throw Trayce Jackson-Davis in there.
Oh, no!
He has an attempt at a three.
And it's not Kevon Looney.
It's not Kevon Looney.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kyle Anderson's struggling, isn't he?
He's shooting better than Pajemski.
What's he doing?
Well, he's shooting in the 20s.
Somebody's lower than Pajemski?
Someone's lower than Pajemski. This guy actually shot it really well from three a couple of years ago. It's GP2.
Yeah,
GP2 is right now shooting 18.8% from three-point range.
That's crazy.
But it does put into perspective just how effective he was shooting the three when they made a championship run. Like, he's not a good shooter, and he's not a player that anybody respects when he takes a three. But if he makes enough of them, in 2022, he made 36% of his threes. You know, that's probably a little bit below league average. But if he can make one a game, you can basically steal three free points. And it doesn't feel like there's anybody on the Warriors that is doing enough to draw a defender out on them outside of Curry, Buddy, and Wiggins. Wiggins is shooting pretty well from three. Because Draymond even is a player that when he shoots well, he doesn't command attention.
Here's why I would give you some... I'm sorry to revisit the Paul George conversation, but this is why...
You can make
an argument, and even though I will stand pat that it's the wrong thing to do for this team, but here's the argument, is that I think that in situations like this, Paul George can go get you a bucket. Paul George or one of those star free, I don't know about Lauri Markkanen, but just for the sake of this conversation, a player like that of Lauri Markkanen's skill set can ISO, have someone up on him, and then just simply get to his spot. And they don't have that other than Steph Curry. And that was the one reason and probably the biggest argument for giving up a lot of equity to go get that superstar. It's for exactly what it is that we experienced the other night.
888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVona, Warriors this week. Let's talk to Dave in Alameda. Wants to get into the Warriors and the Cup. What's up, Dave?
Hey, guys. Good morning. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Oh, my man.
But, yeah, I just wanted to say absolutely agree with what everyone you guys said. I was fortunate, actually, enough to go to the Warrior game when they played OKC, and I absolutely noticed everything, like you guys said. The offense seems stagnant at times. Nobody could get a bucket, and that seems exactly what they need. So, exactly bringing up to your point about, like, Paul George, and even now that I saw on Twitter this morning about guys like potentially, like, Vucevic becoming available, that's just something that I think that we definitely need, because there's just simply times when the ball is not moving, the ball is not going in the hoop, and then that simply just leads to no buckets, and simply that leads to the runs where we just go down, like, what, 15-0, 8-0, 20-0, and then the game becomes impossible. But, yeah, I just wanted to call in and say that I love listening to you guys and really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. Shout out to Mita. I'm going to be there later tonight. You ever been to the island?
Alameda Island?
Yeah.
I have not. The home of Ray Ratto? No, I am not familiar with it. I don't leave this city unless I'm going to the airport.
Dude, you can go across the bridge without a passport. You're not going to get pulled over.
Why? What's out there? I mean, I'm a homebody, man.
Oh, there's a fantastic... Well, there used to be a great winery right on the water, but Alameda's a beautiful place.
That's what I understand. I mean, it's apparently very expensive these days.
It's got a better beach than you guys.
Yeah, see, that's why I draw the line. Now, that's exactly why I'll never venture on that Bay Bridge.
Well, you don't have to worry about king tides. You don't have to worry about getting bit by a shark. And you got to worry about trash being in the water. But the Alameda beaches are nice.
So it's literally an island? And are you accessing it via a causeway, or how are we getting there?
Yeah, you have to go through the Webster Tunnel, or you have to go over the bridge down by Fruitvale.
Okay. And what happens on the island?
There's action.
All right.
Well, I'm just trying to tell you. I'm trying to expand your horizons. I feel like as an East Bay kid, it is my duty to try and bring you to my side of things, because
I'm like Woody Allen. Woody Allen never leaves New York. He stays in his neighborhood.
Well, that makes a little more sense. New York is a bit bigger than San Francisco. I hate to break it to you, but it's a little larger, a little nicer, little more attention to detail.
I don't hear a siren, or if I don't hear a cabbie with a strong accent just absolutely screaming at somebody, if I don't have a homeless person urinating on my front steps, if I don't hear that dog barking next door to me, and I go outside and it's complete solitude, I freak the hell out.
Why are you taking cabs still?
I'm not saying I'm taking it as I walk and do whatever it is that I do. Hey, by the way,
love everyone that listens to our show, but how are taxis still in business?
No, well, you know what? Shout out to the taxis. I mean, they've taken the biggest punch in the jaw. So while everybody's in a Waymo or doing Uber and getting their Uber Eats, there's the poor taxi SOB trying to still make a living on that yellow cab or the checkered cab. And my hat's off to him. And if I got to go from point A to point B, hello, cab driver. That's not true. I don't even know how to get a hold of one of those guys.
Yeah, do you flag him down? I feel like that's what I see in every 90s movie.
You want to give me can I give you my whistle over the air of how to get a cab?
Sure.
Really? Hold on.
It's your show.
That's good radio right there.
Sound like me trying to get the attention of my dog.
Can't do it.
Oh, my God. Well, all right. First of all, the Warriors' offense looks like they've been in a Waymo for the past 3 weeks. But those things got to go. Waymos need to die.
Why?
Dude, you can't have a driverless car that is afraid to make a left turn at a yellow light. They hold up everything. They don't make turns at paces requisite to human, like, it doesn't work. And the fact that they've also been able to, they have technical difficulties, they've broken down, they hold up everything, and they're just gross to look at. I'm sorry, I don't like Waymos. Carter Chickering, Big Chick, has been trying to get me to get in one of these things. He's like a walking advertisement for these monstrosities that are killing our city, your city, and I'm sorry, I'm just sick of it.
You can stop asking that question.
I think that they're the few. I'm on board. I'm not a big Waymo guy, but if it becomes driverless cars, that's the future. Sign me up. That's the biggest stress in my life. You remove driving from me? Hell yeah. And plus, I don't got to worry about that bozo who's going to cross over three lanes, or somebody that's going to just, be that idiot on the road that everybody's sort of at that same. Trusting, I put my hands in the future in robotics and technology, as opposed to you and I.
This is why our civilization is going to crap. Because for comfort and, I don't know, not even a peace of mind. Like, you're handing your life over to an unknown entity, and to a conscious being. You're giving it over to tin.
Yeah.
And you're cool with that?
I am. Listen, driving is so stressful. If I don't have to do it, why would I?
So you can control things? So
you know, the best is you get in the back seat of a Waymo and you're like, hey, driver, can we stop by and maybe pick up your sister and, bring her in the back seat for a good time?
Yeah, well, okay, I was just going to say some foul things happen in the back seat of Waymos. You need to know that.
Really?
Every single time that you get in a Waymo, I've only heard this from experience. I've never been inside a Waymo. But you need to double check with a black light.
Oh, God.
Everything
is it like a
that
hotel?
Happens. No, I'm just
this
telling
is like
you.
Like a Motel 6?
Well, they don't exactly clean them that often, from what I've been told. So, yeah, keep that in mind next time you step in the backseat of Waymo and you want to
screw
at a
driver. Well, that's true for any cab or any public transport.
No, but at least in Waymo? A cab, you have someone that can regulate what is going down in the back seat.
Oh, I gotcha.
Well, especially if there's leather, you might be able to clean it yourself.
I'm sure that there are some sort of, with the technology today, I'm sure, like,
you're
if you were to do some sort of illicit behavior, there would be warning, hands off.
See, the problem is, all right, we're going to hit a break, get back to the Warriors in a minute. The problem is, I think that your generation has grown with so much technological advance that you've just had no choice but to lean all the way into it. You don't actually consider the ramifications of how blindly you trust technology.
Absolutely.
You guys invented, you guys made Terminator.
If this is the end of us, let's go.
Well, it's not the end of you. It's the end of me.
You know what's funny is I saw Waymo down at the Dolphin Club. Early shout out for the Dolphin Club in the first half hour. But it's really, where did we get that?
I don't know. We've had it for the Miami Dolphins have been harpooned.
The hell with the Dolphins, man. That's for my DC references from this point forward. Oh, by the way, man, can we just play Taps for Jersey Ken?
Yeah, why not?
And Tua. But I see, it's on Jefferson Street or the Dolphin Club, and it's this weird dead end. It's really difficult to get to. And so a lot of people like to take Waymo there, and Waymo, and I just sit there and I watch and giggle because Waymo has a hard, really difficult time of trying to navigate how to get out of there. And it gets to this point where it goes forward, it backs up, it gets forward, and then when it gets really desperate, it like gently starts to honk its horn and go, ing, ing, like, help me, help me. Like, oh, Waymo, you didn't figure this one out?
You're just toying with Wally. I mean, you're just messing around with this car that has nothing to offer society outside of a couple of honks and a 16-point turn. Okay, Warriors this week rolls on next on Warriors on a 95-7.
And you will see me in the next segment on YouTube.
We can see you right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you've been on for the last 15 minutes. Yeah. You trust the Waymo, but you don't trust the camera. Dan DeVoe, Evan Giddings, Warriors this week, 95-7 the game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, I know that's the name of the show, but I swear, between Dan DeVoe and Evan Giddings, our show should be named Less is More. I feel like that's what we talk about every single time during commercial breaks.
Well, you know how I feel about sports broadcasting.
Well, we're both passionate about it. After this show, I'm going to go over to St. Mary's first women's basketball home game, our first telecast of the year. So looking forward to that. Dan will be holding down Warriors Live for you. Warriors wrap-up. And it's I just think it's a different challenge than what we do right now. Broadcasting, whether it's on radio or television, is different than sports talk. It's a different muscle that I enjoy flexing.
Yeah.
And I know it's a muscle that you enjoy discussing.
Well, sports talk radio, television broadcasting, sports casting is entirely different. It's a separate animal and a completely different talent level if you want to be a good play-by-play person. So what it is that you're doing is really, there's some connective tissues, but it's an art form almost onto itself. And I think it's difficult to master. It's why it's the few and far between that I think get to that network level, the Joe Davises of the world. But it's one that really does sort of, I'm sort of like, you know, Jerry Seinfeld is really into not only his comedy, but comedy generally speaking. He loves to talk about comics. He loves to talk about how they're just sort of this subculture and what inspires them and how different they are from everybody else. This is why if he ever goes to a party, he immediately gravitates to another comedian. He can find them because they sort of have this weird code. And I think that sports casting is sort of the same way. When you get to that play-by-play level, I think it's the people that master it, it's like a Van Gogh, man. It's art unto itself.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Seinfeld because one thing that I've always really enjoyed, he was talking about comedy. And I think it applies to what we do in some place. Basically, he was talking about, you know the movie There Will Be Blood?
No.
So there's a movie called There Will Be Blood with Daniel Day-Lewis. And it's about, I think, late 1800s. It's about the oil boom. And so this guy is a miner. And he's trying to find oil. And the opening scene, it's a classic Daniel Day-Lewis movie where it's as much about the dialogue as it is about, I don't know, you know, the faces that he makes, just the scenery, the setting, and kind of the grit that accompanies a movie of that era. And in the opening scene, he is mining, and he's just chipping away, and he's just digging. And digging, and he's hitting this rock over and over and over again, and you're wondering in your mind, like, well, God, this opening scene's like 10 minutes long. He's been hitting this rock for what feels like 3 or 4 minutes, and just a long time. And Seinfeld said that that's his favorite scene in the entire movie because that's what comedy is. Yeah. You hit a rock over and over and over again. And you see, and you see, he kind of spits on the rock and he kind of looks for it. And then he throws it away because it's no good. That's what it's like trying to create a joke. You hit it over and over again. You spit on it. You see if there's something there. And then you either toss it or you put it in your pocket. And I feel like sometimes that's what we do on radio because, you know, maybe you run into a fun segment or stumbling about and talking, you know, Airheads talking about the Warriors or the Phoenix Suns who they play tonight. But sometimes you kind of stumble into something that a listener out there might find really entertaining. So I identified with that.
That might be the most poignant thing you've ever said to me. That sums it up. Yeah, and it's sort of what it is I think that you're doing right now, is that you're a comedian, and while you may not be necessarily at Las Vegas frontlining at the MGM Grand, you might be still at Silly's off of Broadway. Well, no, you're not there.
With cricket?
You're getting your reps in, and you're honing a craft, and you're just polishing that rock, and eventually, and this just comes with age, you'll get to that point, and I have no doubt in my mind that you will, but that's exactly what it is that I think you're doing to a certain degree, although I don't think you were making that analogous to you.
No, I mean, it's just something that I identify with, but I also enjoy talking to you about it, whether it's on or off the air, because you've been there, you've done this.
Well, I've never done play-by-play.
No, but you've experienced...
I'm just somebody that's opinionated.
Yeah, but I also identify with the play-by-play broadcasters that you talk about, the ones that you enjoy. And we differ on some guys, yeah. But I can understand why you like particular people and why you don't, and it has to do with the opening to this segment, Less is More.
When you said you were talking about a show where there somebody was finding oil or looking for oil and striking oil, I thought you were talking about the Beverly Hillbillies, which I know predates you. Hey, Granny, move away from there. California is the place you ought to be. So we packed up the bags and moved to Beverly Hills, that is. Movie stars.
God.
You have no idea who the Beverly Hillbillies are, do you?
No, I don't. I was watching, what was I watching last
night? You know,
night?
Their star, Max Baer, either he or his father was a heavyweight champion boxer.
Oh, that's a name I do know. Yeah, from boxing. Yeah, Max Baer.
Yeah.
Was he the guy that Jack Dempsey beat in Cinderella Man?
That I don't know.
Well, the only reason it's on my mind is that I was watching... Yes, thank you. Count the bucket. I was watching Gladiator the other night because I'm going to go...
The new one.
Well, I'm going to go see the second one. I wanted to watch the first one.
Strong reviews for that, huh?
People liked it.
Wow.
But the first one is an all-timer.
Yeah.
And
I'm with you.
Well, and Cinderella Man's also a Russell Crowe film. So yeah. I was just kind of going through and...
James J. Braddock, by the way, not Pat, not Dempsey.
Damn it.
All right.
Oh, that's right. Dempsey was... a different 19.
Dempsey used to have a huge, huge, very popular restaurant right down in Times Square in New York City. And, I have a friend who always tells the exact same story. He's getting a little older. So, you know, old people get the first sign of aging is when they repeat the same story. I'm like, bro, you just told me this like 2 weeks ago in the exact same spot.
But sometimes they tell it better. Like, there's difference.
So they're honing their craft.
Basically, like, you ever met somebody, and I promise we'll get to the Warriors in a sec. You ever met somebody who talks about a fish, and each time they tell the story about them catching the fish,
it
gets bigger?
Yeah.
Like, that I think that's a skill. That is something that not everyone can do, is to better the story every time you tell it, because... That's why someone wants you to tell the story. They've probably heard it before.
Well, good storytellers typically will embellish. That at some point you have to say, okay, there's an element of truth in there somewhere, but there's also a lot of liberties that this person takes. Because usually somebody that likes to tell stories and is good at storytelling takes liberties with the truth. And you have to sort of step back and go, okay, the truth is in there. I just got to find out where exactly it is.
Well, it's funny because the story that I will be telling from Wednesday and embellishing over the course of time is, and we talked about this yesterday, Jake and I, is the irrational confidence that I saw on the face of one Pat Spencer. Did you see him get a technical foul on Wednesday?
He did.
He got teed up in his first real run of the season. Now, if that isn't somebody that believes that he should be a player that is not the 15th man on a Golden State Warriors team, and I don't know what is. Pat Spencer, he's not a bad player, but the fact that he was in the game, number one, I thought was, wow, okay, let's see what this guy's got. And then he goes down the lane, rises up, tries to draw some contact, doesn't get the call because he's Pat Spencer and he's wearing 61 on his back, runs down the court and berates the referee to the point where he just looks at him and gives him the little T. Technical foul, free throw, wow. Other end. It was really funny, actually. I couldn't stop laughing.
But, you know, and on a serious note, you know why you're seeing him? I think that it just speaks volumes to what it is sort of what we were talking about in the first segment, that when Steve Kerr looks down his bench, and now that Steph Curry's out, there's no D'Anthony Melton. Who are your backup point guards? Chris Paul is no longer in the building. It's like he's stretched. How comfortable are you seeing, you know, Kyle Anderson and Draymond Green running the point? I know Pajemski's got his issues, so I guess he could play the point, but there's a lot going on there. He's looking for somebody because Steve Kerr, at the end of the day, what Spencer does, if you can get to the paint, flash the paint, what is it? Every NBA does the exact same thing. Flash the paint, kick, swing, swing. Flash the paint, kick, swing, swing. So if you have somebody that can ball handle, make the right pass, you're going to play for the Golden State Warriors, especially if I've got no Melton and I've got, you know, no Steph Curry available. I mean, the Warriors, the minute I saw him, I was like everybody else. I was scratching my head like, what the hell is Pat Spencer getting burned for in this game against OKC? And then I began to think about it. It's like, well, because who else are you going to go to? I mean, I think that there is a depletion in terms of guys who can just simply cross the timeline, handle the basketball, and be able to kick it to the right guy.
Well, and this isn't something that was just against OKC. Again, these are some issues that I think the Warriors have. It doesn't mean that they can't be a good team. Like, again, I reiterated this yesterday. They're 12-6. They're still on pace for 55 wins. All right, even if they don't win that many games, they're still a good basketball team. But, like you mentioned, there are things we're beginning to recognize about this squad that are weaknesses, that are deficiencies, and that were covered up by the win-loss record. Now against not even the best teams, OKC, I don't know if they exposed them. It's hard to evaluate any game without Curry. But it's the first game they lost without Steph. That's notable. They're 3-1 without him. You know, the loss to San Antonio, I think you saw some issues. The two losses to the Clippers even earlier in the year, you could see where ball pressure really hurt a team that doesn't have a lot of guys that can handle the rock. One of the reasons why I think they threw Spencer into the game is because Pajemski, Wiggins, and Kuminga all in the first quarter against the Thunder had their pocket picked. Like they could not take care of the ball. And so while Pat Spencer I don't think is a game-changing player, the fact he was able to get to the paint, swing it to the corner, just a lot of driving and passing. And that's what they don't have a ton of. No. I mean, Pajemski isn't a guy that can break you down off the dribble. Curry can, but if you double-team him or if there's a longer guy, sometimes he struggles. The Warriors where I think trouble me most is the fact that their point of attack, offense and defense, seems to be pretty inconsistent.
What's the one thing that we had talked about is that, while this is so exciting, playing 13 guys and winning games, and I do think that there is a recipe there, and I do think that the Warriors are going to be competitive throughout the entire season. But we said we got to see more of this. We just have to see, let this play out and see if there's some legitimacy to all of this. And there are two things that have jumped out to me, and we knew about this going into the season, and that is the three games and four nights for the Warriors this past week. And you saw it against San Antonio in that Steph Curry and Draymond Green, when they have to play back-to-back or play a rash of games in a short period of time, as is often the demand in the NBA, they can be exposed. They are clearly not the same players on a back-to-back on the road. And we hadn't seen that until a week ago. And the Warriors are clearly vulnerable. And that's what happens when your best players are 35 and 36, respectively, soon to be 37. That's going to be a problem. We hadn't experienced that until last week. And then again, late in games, who's the guy that's going to get the ball and take you home and just say, jump on my back. I feel confident that I can get you across the finish line. And they don't have that player either.
Well, I think they need multiple of those guys, not necessarily closers or nail and coffin players, but just guys that can go get a basket. You know, it's, I think one of the reasons why they were able to get off to such a hot start, I think, you know, it was 9-2 and then 12-3. Is because if you look at the amount of fourth quarters that Curry didn't play, or even Draymond didn't play, it was a lot more than at the start of last season. And so you can build in rest throughout games. Like Curry The first back-to-back of the season was against New Orleans at home. And it helped that a lot of Pelicans were out. But the second night of the back-to-back, they shellacked New Orleans because they didn't have to play much. I think Curry was at 27, 28-ish minutes. You know, I think they lost the game against Brooklyn because Kerr had to expend his veterans against San Antonio. And the reason why they were spent on the second night of a back-to-back is because they couldn't put away the Pelicans. So there's this domino effect of, well, if you don't win that first game of the back-to-back, well, then you're a little bit gassed for the next night. Then you might be vulnerable that night. And then that might cause Curry to play 35 minutes, which he did against San Antonio, which is going to wear on those 36-year-old knees that he's now got bilateral patellofemoral pain in, or whatever the injury designation is. And then you're going to have to eventually load manage him and sit him. And you don't want it to be against a team like OKC, because if Curry plays in that game, you probably win.
Did you just make that word up?
No, I swear to God. I think that's what he actually has. Yeah. Bilateral patellofemoral pain, I think.
Which is...
I'm waiting for Jersey Ken to double check.
Basically, but. My knee hurts like hell.
Yeah, I have old man knees.
Yeah.
Well, I think... Although Kerr actually mentioned the word tendonitis on Wednesday.
The Warriors are just... When you think about the number two score as it relates to the Golden State Warriors, and Jonathan Kuminga, let's just stay on him for a second. I think that we're getting closer and closer, the more we see of him, that he becomes a trade commodity. And maybe they were trying to move off of him last year and they just couldn't find the right suitors. But, and I know, I guess it doesn't have as much impact. It should, and it still is impactful. But the fact that he's 22 and that you can look back and this could be a huge mistake 2, 3, 5 years from now is less and less impactful, I think. And I think the further we go along and the more he continues to be more of a tease than anything else and not consistently giving you those points, and for it to really sort of come out in this game against Oklahoma where you can clearly see that you need a number two and it's not Jonathan Kuminga, I think the more that becomes evident, the more he becomes a trade commodity going forward for the Warriors.
So I agree with you, and I think it's more about the fact that I don't know if he's a perfect fit for the Warriors system, but the issue is that if you're going to trade someone like Kuminga, then you'd like to receive a pretty big piece back. The only way that you can acquire a large salary player is through somebody like Wiggins, and I don't think the Warriors want to move off of him at this point.
My, how times have changed.
Well, no, that's true. They're trying to get off him in a hell in a handbasket.
Second half of last year.
And this summer. Yeah. But the thing is now it's, okay, well, but, all right, you know, if you could upgrade your three spot, if you could go get, I don't know, name your small forward of choice, I think they'd do it, but you want to keep Kuminga, Wiggins, those kinds of players. So I think the Warriors are stuck to where Kuminga doesn't really fit right now, but the ceiling that he can help you get to is, I don't know, maybe higher than giving up on him and moving him for a player, because I'm not really sure what kind of guy they're going to be able to get.
Well, that's everything. I mean, it just depends on what it is you're getting in return. So when you sit down or you pick up a phone and you're Dunleavy and you begin to officially shop this guy, you have to see what it is that people are willing to give up. And that's when the trigger gets pulled.
But I don't think his value is that great around the league because people are afraid of what he wants to be paid.
Well, I would disagree because it depends on the team. It depends on the fit. I don't think it's a fit with the Warriors. He's not a 3 or he's not a 4. And Kerr wants him a 4. He's a 3. For crying out loud, he's a 2 at the end of the day, or at least he thinks he is. It's not a fit on this team.
Well, he thinks he's a 1.
And he can't shoot the basketball. And so that's, you know, but there are teams that have shooters that need a slasher or that want to rebuild or feel that a 22-year-old with his talent is a perfect fit for their future and are in for tomorrow and not necessarily today. So I think it really depends on the team. And I think there's teams that are willing to invest in Jonathan Kuminga. I bet you there's a lot of GMs that see him and saying, you know what, if I get my hands on Jonathan Kuminga, you know, I got myself a future piece that I can win with. And they might be right at the end of the day. It's just not working with the Warriors.
Well, it might be with a team like Brooklyn. I think that was a team that was connected to him this summer or said they might have interest in restricted free agency.
You give me the two cams and we're good to go.
Well, Cam Thomas is a bucket. That dude's, that was the other.
He didn't even play in the fourth quarter.
I know. That was the most concerning part about the loss is you gave up 130 points. Cam Thomas didn't play in the fourth quarter. Cameron Johnson didn't play the second half.
That's crazy.
Arguably, their two best players weren't in the game. They were killing you with Zaire Williams at the five and, gosh, who was the other guy? Trenton Watford?
Yeah.
Shout out Portland. No, the Warriors, I think, are... You can see now why they were trying to make a bid for Paul George and Lauri Markkanen. Whether you believe it was the right move or not, the lack of offense, specifically in crunch time, half-court situations, gives you a reason to understand why Mike Dunleavy Jr. in this front office was looking to acquire another alpha alongside Steph. Now, I don't think that Paul George... I think you're right. I don't think Paul George was that player. And I don't know if Markkanen by himself is that player, but...
You would have to be at that price tag.
I mean, I think it'd be 6-1, half dozen to the other. I think you'd be 12-6, maybe even regardless. Like, Paul George wouldn't be available for some of these games that you'd probably lose, and he might help you win a couple of these close games that you lost. But I do think that we are overreacting a bit to their... Again, this is their first slip of the season. It's the first time they've lost three in a row. It's the first time that they've had concerning losses. Although, really, the only concerning loss, in my opinion, is the one to Brooklyn. Like, San Antonio made sense because what you said, 3-4 nights, you wore down, you looked tired. And then OKC, I know that they were missing a few of their good players, but that's a really good basketball team. And I think you understand why you could lose that game.
Yeah, just to stay on San Antonio for a minute, what did you think of Wembanyama?
Okay, everyone says he's shooting too many threes, and I understand. But when he does and when he hits them,
yeah,
dude, he can change games. I mean, and he already can change game with his defense. But if he ever shoots close to 40% from three-point range, this dude is going to be unstoppable.
Which he will. He's got like a little – he's a 7'6" with a Klay Thompson mentality. He did not stop shooting that
thing. He has a true jump shot, too. It's not just like a little set shot that he hoists up like a Manute Bol fish line.
But he does not get deterred after missing five in a row. He is still going to shoot that thing. And I think the rest of his game, he does shoot it too much. For someone 7'6", I don't mean to be Mr. 1990s guy, but you, as 7'6", you do have to have some, give me some interior presence, please. Just get down there and give me a jump hook. Just give me a little turnaround. Learn to shoot it with your left to right. Just do a Bill Walton jump hook and you'll destroy this league. Your inside out game will just be absolutely, that's first ballot Hall of Famer. But I do think that's going to come. That's all going to come in due time. And he's just being... He's being a very much of a 7'6" European who likes to play face up and is enamored with handling the basketball and shooting it from beyond distance.
Yeah, I mean, he's 20 years old. I also think he's going to get a little bit bigger. I mean, he's...
What?
Wider. Oh. Wider. Well, I don't know. Probably Trayce Jackson-Davis grew a couple inches. Kuminga grew an inch or two. But the thing is, if you come...
Would you want to be 7'6" at the end of the day?
Yeah, why not? He came into the league... at probably less than 200 pounds. So I don't know if it's even plausible for him to... Like, which center is he going to back down? Those guys are like 250, 260.
Oh, that's true. I think I told you that he got rooted out by Austin Reeves when he was trying to post up Austin Reeves, and Austin Reeves just literally rooted him out of the spot. And so he has no lower center of gravity right now. But he's got to learn. That's just it. It's not fun, and it's sort of like it's not as sexy. It's not as glamorous. You're not crossing guys over. You're not shooting that little butterfly Jimmy from 25 feet. But you've got to learn to play down, you know, muck it up a little bit. You're 7'6" for crying out loud. I mean, Olajuwon and David Robinson and all Patrick Ewing are just like, my God, just give me this guy for 10 minutes and I'll teach him some things.
Well, even without being able to have a post game. He's still averaging 24, 10, and 4 blocks
a
night.
And the thing about him,
oh my
he's
God.
Like, you know, my mom used to read these or listen to this, or maybe I read about this. There was radio, and there was a radio show that was the most popular, and it was called The
Warriors This Week?
The Shadows Know. The Shadow Knows. The Shadow's always lurking. I guess The Shadow might have been like some crime detective guy. And so it's like The Shadow, or maybe he was a villain. I don't know. But that's just it. Defensively, Steph Curry was like, he was like an insect. He's like, he had eyes like, where the hell is that guy? Because I know he's not in front of me, but I know he's somewhere. I know he's lurking, man. And he changes everything defensively with those tentacles he calls arms.
There was a play in the preseason last year. It was in the first few minutes. So we'll hit a break in a second here. There's a play in the first few minutes where Andrew Wiggins just teed up like a corner three, like he was just going to, you know, I'll just take it. Wembanyama's in the paint. He blocked the shot. And Wiggins had a look of just dumbfoundness on his face. Like, how did he get to that? And then the next time down, or maybe it was a couple possessions later, he blocks Wiggins from the top of the key and then goes coast to coast. And this was in preseason. It was probably the first time a lot of Warriors fans, or maybe NBA fans, had seen him, you know, play in the States and play live, and is like, oh my God. And it feels like he's just scratching the surface. It's also a big reason why San Antonio, though he's missed a couple of games so far, they're 10-9. They're not a bad basketball team.
That was one
team.
Of the biggest gimmies this year. Their over and under, I want to say, was like in the high 30s.
I thought it might have been lower than that.
Mid-30s?
I'll tell you which team I was dead wrong about on the other side, and it's not the Golden State Warriors. But we will get into them further. Again, they play Phoenix tonight, 6 o'clock. Dan DeVone's got Warriors live at 5 o'clock. Warriors wrap-up as well, all right here on 95.7 The Game. If you want to get your calls in, ask a question, get into the conversation, send us a text as well. 888-957-9570 is the number. We're back after this.